This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:15 in the evening. Uman Ezra here on the evening edition. We've been talking about this news report in the Straits Times about a divergence of opinions between the political leaders within the Pakatan Harapan Coalition and the Council of Eminent Persons. And especially, of course, with regards to, the influence of the chairperson, Tun Daim Zainuddin, yeah, who is the former finance minister. We're going to cross over right now to Professor James Chin. He's the director of the Asia Institute Tasmania. James, thank you very much for joining us on the evening edition. Talk to us about what concerns you might have from stakeholders in Pakatan Harapan and government about the Council of Eminent Persons.
I'm not sure there are concerns in Pakatan. I think, if I'm not mistaken, when the CEP was established, all the top leadership in Pakatan were consulted about the body. So I'm not sure there's any concern within the government itself. But I think civil society is concerned about the CEP for the simple reason that nothing was mentioned about the CEP prior to the election. And also they're concerned that if you're not elected, you should not be getting yourself involved in setting government policy. So I think the real concern among civil society has to do with the issue of transparency and also the issue of accountability.
So James, how much influence does the CEP really have over policies and the government?
The CEC doesn't actually provide the government with any policy. It provides advice to the government about how to go ahead and clean up many of the mess that was left over from the previous government. So in terms of policy making, they'll be making suggestions to the government. But you have to remember, policy still comes from the federal cabinet. So anything put forward by the CEP will be discussed in depth by the politicians in cabinet before it becomes policy. So if you look at it from that perspective, CEP actually doesn't have any policy input in the government process. I just want to make it very clear to your listeners that this is quite a common thing. If you look at some of the major industrialized countries around the world, they also have advisory bodies that do not sit in anywhere. These are people who advise the ruling parties, the cabinet. It's a well-known fact in the British system, you have the cabinet policy office. Getting advice to the government is actually quite a common thing. I think for Malaysia, simply because we never had a change of regime, this is the first time we've seen a new government, and we saw something like this, and the fact that Daim is super influential in Malaysian politics because of Mahathir, because of this, some concerns were raised. But I can assure your listeners that at the end of the day, it is cabinet, the Malaysian federal cabinet, who decides on all the major policy issues, and Daim and the CEP can only make suggestions to cabinet. They don't actually make the real policies.
James, Tun Mahathir, the Prime Minister, has said that the CEP will only be around for 100 days, but many worry that their influence, especially that of Tun Daim, might go beyond the 100 days. Do you see this happening?
Yes. You have to remember, Daim and Mahathir goes back a very, very long way. They've been political allies all their life. Daim served as finance minister twice in the Mahathir administration, the first Mahathir administration. So even if there was no CEP, Mahathir would still tap on Daim's shoulder and ask for his advice on government policies. My personal opinion is that it is better to have the CEP around where everything is at least more transparent, where there's a discussion before the advice is given to the government. If you don't have the CEP, it means basically Daim will be advising Mahathir one-to-one. And I think that's even more problematic than having a formal body like the CEP.
So from what you've said, just the fact that Tun Daim, an unelected person and someone who's outside the system, could have so much influence and clout over Tun M, even without being in the council, I mean, surely that's a concern.
Sure. You can look at it from that perspective. But I can also argue under the previous administration, there were certain individuals who I can't name for legal reasons who were deemed to be very influential in the Najib administration. For example, we know one guy who's Sarawak, who was following Najib on all his foreign trips, and he received a bulk of the contracts for roadworks in Sarawak. There was another guy who was playing golf with him regularly and got some of the major contracts as well. So in that case, that's even worse because all those discussions were not held in public, no papers were produced, and it was a one-to-one discussion. So I would rather have something like the CEP where there is at least a group of eminent people who will discuss the issue, some paper will be produced, and at least you know what sort of advice they'll be giving to the government. So I would actually prefer a body like CEP rather than the one-to-one. You have to remember, political leaders around the world, they will always have their advisors. It is not possible to take away the role of so-called influential people. And what do we mean by influential people? Basically, we mean people with access to whoever is the prime minister or the president of the country. So this is something that's very common. It is expected in every political system. And I feel quite strongly that Malaysians really do not have to worry about this.
All right, James. And this is the last thing we'd like to address with you. Tun Mahathir recently tasked Tun Daim Zainuddin to go to China. This was to renegotiate the previous government's deals with Chinese firms. Why was Tun Daim sent instead of a minister or a senior government official, considering the CEP's role as a mere advisory body?
Yes. Again, this is quite common. In diplomatic speak, this is called track two. The idea behind track two is that you send somebody without an official post to negotiate simply because you want to give that person wide latitude. Sometimes you send an official, he can't discuss certain aspects. So somebody like Dime will be allowed to basically float the balloon on any issues he wants and see what the Chinese thinking is. Then you come back and report to Mahathir before Mahathir makes the formal trip or before Lim Guat Eng makes the formal trip. So they will have a better idea of the thinking among the Chinese leaders. So it is always a good idea to send so-called private individual or non-government officials to have a chat with the other side first. Again, this is quite common. Even the Americans do it all the time. For years, when the Americans did have a relationship with North Korea, they used to send, retired diplomats. Like I said, in the diplomatic world, it's called track two, and again, very, very common. As I said earlier, the problem with Malaysians now is that they get too excited about a regime change. So everything that doesn't look right to them, they complain about it, when in fact, all these things are actually quite normal.
All right, James, thank you very much for joining us on the program and for the analysis. That was Professor James Chin, Director of the Asia Institute Tasmania at the University of Tasmania.
And he's absolutely right. In the past, a lot of these, I guess, secret advisors were secret, right?
Yeah.
This one's out in the open for the first time,
right.
And we're thinking something's up and something's afoot.
In fact, it's just perhaps business as
usual.
Par
for the course, yeah. Right.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.